When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's going on, Jermaine Johnson? Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at Will Pod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Another episode today, just me, normal Monday episode. Unfortunately, not a Victory Monday episode for the New York Jets and a Turn on the Jets podcast. Victory Monday, a bit more of a, in Badlands terms, a bit more of a therapy session. A lot to kind of go over and break down. As normal, this will be a quick 10-15 minute solo pod, and then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week we'll have some special guests, potentially another one tomorrow as well, as this is one of the biggest Jets games of the year for many reasons, which I'll get to at the end of this episode. But let's kind of start off with the elephant in the room, which is the officials and how this game ended last night. Obviously, the Jets lose 23-20. Really riveting, exciting Sunday night football game. The Jets brought it, two primetime games in a row, two of the best games of the year. Obviously, Jets Bills week one. And now, Jets Chiefs week four. Let's start with the officials, because, it's obviously something that has been much talked about by a lot of people around the league. And a couple of different things were at play here. Do I think that technically Sauce Gardner held on that play? Sure. You could call holding on any play, though. That's the way the NFL works. Was Jermaine Johnson held on a 3rd and 20 and 3rd and 22 as well? Yep. And guess what? They held that Donovan Smith and, Juwan Taylor were holding about every single play, throughout the game. So what was kind of happening throughout the game is there was a physical battle. They were kind of letting the guys play a little bit. It was a bit surprising to start off the game. Jermaine Johnson gets a personal foul call, which was a terrible call, say the least. Trey Smith's 340 pounds and flopped like a fish by getting touched, gently by Jermaine Johnson, to put it lightly. So, you get there and you're a little frustrated, but then the rest of the game, it felt like they were kind of letting these guys play. They're letting them hit the quarterback a little bit. They're letting the receivers and corners kind of go at it physical. A lot of trash talking, Isaiah Pacheco getting into it with pretty much everybody on the Jets, on and on. So a lot of hand fighting in the secondary, a lot of holding especially on the Chiefs tackles. It felt like they were holding, virtually every play. And, Chiefs fans, obviously a little bit annoyed about the face mask and horse collar penalty. I'm not really sure why. Pretty clear there. Looking at it live, yeah, maybe the slow-mo, it doesn't look quite as bad. But Bryce Huff got held, or it was a face mask. Either one would have resulted in a safety, so save the shit there. In general, though, my point is the officiating was pretty terrible last night as a whole, but they were letting these guys play, right? So they set the tempo of the game, and Sauce Gardner said as much, that the reason he was kind of shocked they called that, amongst the other things, which we'll get to, which is the real issue here, they let them do that all night, and all of a sudden to just decide now is when you're gonna throw the flag. The real two issues here is the consistency, like I mentioned. Robert Saleh talked about it today. I talked about it on two other shows yesterday and today. You can't have a strike zone for 8 innings. The entirety of both teams, you change their approach to your strike zone, and the 9th inning in a 3-2 count with the bases loaded and the top of the 9th in a tie ball game or down one run, you all of a sudden, call somebody out on a pitch that's, barely in the zone, but it wasn't in the zone the entire night, right? So that's the biggest issue here. The second biggest issue, which I would argue is even a bigger issue, is blatant, you know, calls that led to points. The Isaiah Pacheco first touchdown run. Not only is there a blatant holding on Michael Clemens, who just missed the tackle, but there's a blatant hold. Javion Sherwood gets Kurt Angle ankle locked. Can't make the play. The Chiefs score. That's a 7-point, you know, swing there. And the most egregious part is Michael Carter catches that ball, right? The entire stadium goes nuts. Mahomes throws his third interception. Really should have been his fourth of the game. He was pretty awful last night. You know, by Mahomes' standard, obviously had a nice final drive with some using his legs. But again, in the air, the Jets kind of had their way better than any team's ever played against Patrick Mahomes, by the way. No one's ever held him under 250 yards with two or more interceptions. So we'll get to the defense in a second, but it's a damn impressive job. Michael Carter catches the ball. The ref double clutches and then decides to throw the flag. After, like, they wasn't going to throw the flag, then throws it because Michael Carter catches it. So when you see these people, when you see people saying that's a horrible call or what a joke or, you know, the NFL is rigged and all that stuff, it comes from the fact that they basically bailed Patrick Mahomes out of a terrible decision. Not going to mention the intentional grounding, not to mention Garrett Wilson getting held on pretty much every play. But again, you can go tit for tat, right? There's some calls the Jets got, some calls the Chiefs got. It just felt like the calls the Chiefs got away with all resulted in points or all resulted in the deciding factors of the game. Again, can you blame the officials? Yes. There's other parts of this game that the Jets are going to look back on and say, damn, we should have gotten there. You know, we should have gotten out of here with a victory. If Tyler Conklin's able to come up with a scramble drill touchdown, if Garrett Wilson, Zach Wilson are able to connect on a ball that they were maybe 6 inches, 9 inches, 12 inches short, whatever the amount of feet, whatever, 2 feet short from a beautiful go ball, you know, 30, 40 yard touchdown. You know, they're short there. CJ Mosley had an interception go through his hands that resulted in 3 points. Greg Zuerlein misses a kick resulting in 3 points. Michael Carter had a drop. So again, there's things there where the officials are to blame, but at the same time, the Jets could have taken care of business on their own there and not left it up to the officials' hands. Again, it's the consistency and the timing with which that's called. It's not even necessarily that he held or didn't hold. It's the fact that if you hadn't called it all game, why are you calling it now and why are you bailing Patrick Mahomes out from a bad interception? So that's the officials, right? Let's get past that. The biggest positive of the game is obviously Zach Wilson. I beat Zach up pretty bad on this pod, you know, a week ago, and you know he deserved it after the Patriots game. He was putrid, and you know he really struggled in the second half. I felt like against Dallas, and at times against Buffalo wasn't great. But you know they were able to get a victory and all that different type of stuff. And obviously we know the whole deal the first 2 years and on and on and on. Right, like we've been over the Zach story a million times. This was probably outside of two plays Zach Wilson's best NFL start ever, the best he's ever looked. Pretty clean game. He obviously had the fumble, which we'll get to in a moment. 250 yards, operate in structure within the offense. I think that's the most important thing. He ran the offense the way it's supposed to be run, was efficient, was really damn good in play action, made some plays outside of the pocket when he needed to, but made all the throws, timing. The Jets offensive line did a fantastic job, I thought, last night for the most part. Opened up holes in the run game, were fantastic in terms of pass pro. Zach didn't feel like he got hit a ton. Joe Tippmann's been fantastic. The Joe Tippmann AVT partnership is something to watch going forward. That's a really nice young core right there on the right side. And Kai Becton had his ups and downs last night, but again, did a decent job. I thought Lincoln Tomlinson was more than efficient. Connor McGovern struggled quite a bit, you know, going against probably the second best defensive tackle in football. I get it, but he seems to be kind of the weakest link right now in that offensive line. If they can get him playing even average, this offensive line actually has got a lot of potential. Again, I thought they looked really good last night. This is a really good Chiefs defense. But Zach Wilson was awesome, you know, for the most part. Again, the fumble is really disappointing. It sucks because he felt like it was there. You know, Zach didn't start the game great. Felt like the first three drives were like, oh, God, here we go again. It was like, okay, had a couple completions, but, you know, missed Breece Hall wide open on a third down. Felt like he missed, you know, a couple other things there where you're like, ah, oh, man, like, is this what's going to happen again? Then they get the safety, and all of a sudden it kind of clicked for him. And the drive coming out of, and you know, coming out of the second half in the third quarter, probably his best drive as a pro. Back shoulder throws, throwing seam routes, throwing, you know, absolute rockets, you know, to his left, which we never see Zach Wilson do. He's using his legs. He's scrambling for a 2-point conversion, good contact balance, and you know, in the pocket. And it just felt like, again, I don't want to make too much of it from the aspect of it's one game. The Jets did lose the football game. He did have the fumble and all that stuff, right? And we can be negative all we want, but at the end of the day, this is something huge the Jets can build on. And if Zach can even be 75, 80% of what he was, you know, last night, give the Jets a chance in pretty much every game they're going to play the rest of the year. The Jets defense is way more locked in when they know they have a shot on offense. We saw it against Buffalo, and we saw it the last three quarters against the Chiefs, where they felt like they had a shot and they turned it up big time. I was just really impressed with the way Zach kind of kept his composure, was locked in. It looked like he was having fun, and like he kept his focus pretty much the entire game, which is something, again, we haven't seen. But again, it keeps coming back to playing within structure, playing within the offense, and he was decisive, and he quote-unquote let it rip, which everyone wanted all week. This wasn't letting it rip, and, you know, he went, you know, 29 of 51 for 400 yards, but four touchdowns and eight picks. Like, you know, it's not – it wasn't one of those, like, off-script games where he's just kind of YOLO balling it the entire time. Zach looked really good within the structure and took what the defense gave him, a lot of, you know, 1-2-3 plant hitch, you know, or 1-2-3-4-5 plant and get the ball out. You know, he was comfortable in the pocket. And, you know, props to him. His career was pretty much on the line. His Jets career, for at least, you know, that matter last night. And, you know, in front of 27 million people and 85,000 in the crowd and all that different stuff, he showed up. And, you know, credit to him. And I think this build is a huge momentum builder for the Jets, you know, going into Denver, who's historically right now the worst defense in the NFL through four games we've ever seen by DVOA metrics. So they got to go in, got to build off this. A lot more Brees Hall off the right side, please. I think it's, you know, Jeremy Rucker, AVT, and Lincoln Tomlinson. And Joe Tippmann, you know, in that right side run game with Brees Hall running is a scary sight. And you know, Brees is going to break one of these. It feels like he's broken, obviously, a few really long ones here, but, you know, hasn't been able to finish it. So there's a one missed block or not able to make the final guy miss. You know, he's going to break one of these. And, you know, he is still a special, special player when he's in the open field there and things like that. Garrett Wilson, obviously, did Garrett Wilson things last night. Tyler Conklin, I thought, you know, I know he had the drop early on, but made some really tough and big-time catches, you know, throughout the game. CJ Uzama made a really nice catch. He got one screen called back, which was kind of a joke penalty. Another one, Connor McGovern should not have been called for a legal man downfield. Jeremy Rucker was fantastic last night in the run game. When he's on the field, I believe Zach was like 9 of 12 for 148 yards or whatever it was. The run game was more efficient. So, again, keep playing Jeremy Rucker more. We got to see some Xavier Gibson. Saw some Mecole Hardman, Randall Cobb, like Alan Lazard had a nice day. The Jets got everybody involved in offense. I think Zach completed a pass to 10 different receivers. Again, some drops that are killer on offense and defense, frankly. You know, but overall, I thought the offense gave them a shot to win. It's just crazy to think, you know, 24 left in the game. Zach fumbles there and the Jets don't get the ball back. It's a killer because, again, do we know Zach would have go down and win that game? No, but it kind of had that feeling of a night where, you know, the Jets were going to end up kind of pulling that game out after starting slow. Let's get to the defense quickly here. And then again, touch on one or two other things and then kind of move forward to you know, the couple pods remaining this week. The defense was one of those games where kind of similar to Buffalo, they started, you know, they kind of seemed to start slow. Dallas, New England, they start seemed to have started slow, and you never can really tell. The last three games, was it, you know, quarterback situation? Was it the offense? What was it? Again, this is probably the best offense in football. And, you know, overall, I thought the defense, they gave up 17 early. It was tough. They got screwed on that first drive, obviously, between the Pacheco, the two penalties that should have been called on that play, the Jermaine Johnson one, it's a tough drive. They hold, you know, or they held them to three, and then the next drive, obviously, the Pacheco penalty. So it's now 10-0 when it probably really should have been at most 7 or at most 6. You know, obviously the kind of busted coverage on the right side, it looked like Jordan Whitehead, Michael Carter, and DJ Reed kind of had some miscommunication there in, you know, the busted coverage of Noah Gray. They locked down, though. The final three quarters held Patrick Mahomes, again, under 250 yards passing. You know, one touchdown, two interceptions. Patrick Mahomes obviously threw a third, should have had a fourth. CJ Mosley kind of dropped. He caught one later in the game. He had a fumble. He has ended up being able to recover. So, I mean, I haven't seen someone play Mahomes that well. You know, overall, obviously, again, it's disappointing not to get off the field. It felt like just an emotional roller coaster of multiple third and 20s. You feeling like you got them off the field three separate times. You didn't. You get the big turnover, and then, you know, third and eight, Mahomes scrambles and kind of wins the game for you there. So, overall, look, I thought the Jets team, you know, rebounded, fought well. Again, you got to start faster, but two games on primetime, you know, they've put out a great showing. a lot to build on with Zach Wilson, a lot to build on with this offense, and honestly with this defense. Should go into this Denver game, Russell Wilson against pressure. We saw this Jets team play Denver last year. They kind of felt like they had their way with them, even when Zach was playing bad, and they lost AVT and Breece Hall, you know, early on in that game. So must-win game coming up for this week. This is a big week, probably the biggest week of the Jets season. Can you get to 2-3? Now you're starting to have some good vibes. You're starting to feel good. The playoffs is still a thing. You're locked in. You're getting some progress out of Zach. Aaron Rodgers is back and looking good, and somehow his leg hasn't atrophied, and he's got the mustache and the whole thing. A lot better positive vibes than I think most were expecting this morning to come away with. So, again, multiple pods on the feed this week. You know, excited for a big game in Denver, and then they come home against Philly before the bye, and you know, hopefully they're a chance to go 3-3. Philly's begging to lose a game this year. They feel like they've gotten pretty lucky or almost thrown away a couple of different games. You know, can the Jets go to 2-3 and kind of put all their eggs in a basket before the bye and somehow find a way to 3-3 amidst the quarterback play, the injuries, the turmoil? All that said, this team has got a chance even at 2-4 kind of to make a run of things here, you know, after the bye and make the playoffs. So, again, need another consistent performance from Zach. A really good building block. Credit where credit is due. You know, good for Zach, good for this offense. Nathaniel Hackett called a really nice game. The defense snapped into it, you know, in the second, third, and fourth quarter. You know, got to start faster, you know, this week. But again, you know, props to now they've held, you know, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes to a combined, about 42 points, I believe, or 43 points, you know, across two games. And, you know, have done a really, really damn good job, turning the ball over with those two guys. And then the special teams, as always, unfortunately, Greg Zuerlein misses that kick, difference in the ball game there. So, you know, got to get that cleaned up. But again, enjoy the rest of your night. Jets lose a really big, heartbreaker. The officials, some kind of missed opportunities, but positive vibes going into a must-win game, this week in Denver.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
He was not bad in that game. I mean, he had a couple nice throws to Claypool, who, you know, obviously dropped a couple of them, as he's known to do. Like, he's a good journeyman, solid backup, give you a start in a pinch type player, and that is currently an upgrade over Zach Wilson.
Yeah, look, I guess I want to kind of transition to, we've talked a little bit about it, but obviously things are going to kind of continue to become more and more clear. A, do you think they make another move at some point this year for either higher quality starter or not a backup level name? And what are some realistic names? Because you see a lot of different things thrown out there. The one that I think is the most unrealistic, there's some that we will talk about that are realistic, but the Stafford thing's not happening. I know the Jets called on Stafford. I think after week one or before, you know, it was like, oh, this is a hot, flashy name. The Rams are going to suck. The Rams are really well coached and are going to be a lot better than people think, especially with how bad, you know, they'll get two wins against Arizona. Like, there's like little wins there that they're going to figure out how to kind of maintain. Seattle's nowhere near as good as we thought. Stafford's unrealistic, plus the number next year of dead cap money. The Rams are not eating like $68 million. That's unrealistic. They're not falconing this thing with Matt Ryan. There is some other realistic names. Where do you see of like what's realistic? what's some timing that maybe, you know, fans can kind of look for? If like, I kind of floated out there post Eagles game, I feel it's the most realistic, especially with one of the names with, you know, where the schedule lines up for both the Vikings and the Titans for two teams in specific.
Yeah. So of those two, I mean, I think those are going to be the names we hear the most. I don't buy the Kirk Cousins for a couple of reasons. First, they don't have a backup quarterback, right? I mean, you're looking at Jaren Hall, the fifth round rookie out of BYU. He's not ready to play. That's why they brought in Jordan Ta'amu, who's been like a good XFL player, honestly a fun football player. But again, the Vikings are not going to say, hey, Justin, we didn't extend you this offseason. Would you like to play 10 games with Jordan Ta'amu under center? And then we're going to talk extension after that. He's going to say no. So, Cousins to me is not a realistic option. I get their 0-3. They had one score losses at Philly and against the Chargers in a game they very really realistically could have won. So, and they're in the NFC. They could probably figure it out. So, but to me, the other one, Ryan Tannehill, and it's more dictated by the Tennessee Titans than it is the New York Jets, where Mike Vrabel sitting in the AFC South with 1-2 Jaguars is not going to sit there and give up on winning this division. And as crazy as he is, because like they probably could, even though like, the roster is so bad, they probably could still win this division. But if they lose to the Bengals this weekend, maybe lose a couple more games, if they're like 1-5, unlike Minnesota, they obviously have Will Levis. They have Malik Willis in the building. They have guys they want to see play. It's the last year of Tannehill's deal. He's not coming back next year. That one I think is legit. And of course, everyone does the dot connecting, but it is meaningful that Todd Downing is the pass game coordinator in New York. It does. It matters. He's been with him for a long time. You also maybe could argue, oh, there's potential competition if the Falcons want to quit on Desmond Ridder. Maybe that, you know, forces the Jets to be like, okay, if we want to get this done, like we might actually have to push for it a little bit. But yeah, the compensation wouldn't be too big, so I think the Jets would be open to it. Like you mentioned earlier, they have a first-round pick now, not for Ryan Tannehill, but they have a first-round pick now at their disposal, which is nice to have in your back pocket just for adding talent to your roster. That one I do think is realistic, but basically if you're a Jets fan, you have to root against the Titans the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'd say root against the Titans for both because they're in your conference, but also because that's probably the biggest path to Jets making the playoffs. Other than Zach figuring it out or Trevor Siemian finding the fountain of youth, it's probably a Ryan Tannehill level player that, yes, Tannehill struggled this year, but the Titans, again, their offensive line's heinous. And we know Tannehill are behind like bad weapons and a bad offensive line is never going to work. Plus the Titans offense has been boring for like 15 years at this point. So, you know, since they lost AJ Brown again, he's not been the same quarterback, which the Jets have a mega star in Garrett Wilson at receiver. They have the run game where Tannehill's, you know, thrived, Downing, Hackett. There's a lot of things there that make a ton of sense. I still think it'd be like a 2025 conditional pick on snaps or how far they go, or maybe it's a 24 day three pick. Again, I know we kind of talked a little bit about it. Can you just explain a little bit the money from the Kirk? And I know we think Kirk's not as realistic. I fully agree. He's a no trade clause. He's not going to go the 1-5 Vikings to the 2-4 Jets. It doesn't really make a ton of sense. If he did, it's great. The Jets should be a playoff team. With Tannehill, they should be a playoff team. Frankly, with any league average quarterback, they should be a playoff team. I guess we're up with these two things, but can you just explain it, the Kirk and Tannehill money and how that could potentially work down in the future here? Because it's the Jets have cap space, but again, these contracts are not just like dollar for dollar.
So the way it breaks down, money-wise, it does. It's easier with Kirk Cousins, but again, we don't see it happening. But nevertheless, the way you do it is simply, you know, going over thecap.com, go look at the guy's base salary, so not his cap hit, his base salary, divide that number by 18, and then however many weeks we are into the season, subtract that amount out, right? So let's say we're talking that it's going to happen in week 6, so like or like after 6 weeks, right? You just take 2/3 of the guy's salary, that would travel to the Jets. So for Kirk, after, you know, he has a $10 million salary. So you wait after 6 weeks, a third of it gets chopped off. You're bringing in a $6.67 million salary. The Jets can obviously fit that in. I think that draft capital would probably cost you a little bit more. But nevertheless, with the Titans, Tannehill does have a $27 million salary, which is pretty darn big. But again, with every week that passes by, $1.5 million is going to the Titans. So, you know, again, after week 6, you chop off whatever that would be, trying to do math on the fly here, $9 million. So you bring in an $18 million salary. But what I think would happen with Tennessee is we've seen this a bunch across the NFL. Von Miller, probably the biggest example. It happened with Roquan Smith. It happened with, you know, Robert Quinn last year. The Jets could say, okay, Tennessee, look, right now we'll offer you a 2025 fifth round pick for Ryan Tannehill if we take on the entire $18 million salary. However, if you're willing, and this actually happened with Tannehill when he went to Tennessee, if you're willing to convert half of that $18 million into a signing bonus and pay Ryan Tannehill that money, we'll send you a 2025 conditional third instead of a fifth. And, you know, because you're eating all that extra, you know, cash for us. But option three, though, is they try to convince Tannehill, the person, not Tennessee, hey, man, agree to a restructured deal where you lower your salary. So not Tennessee retaining it. He just takes less money, which I think to a degree he'd probably be open to. I get it's his last time he's ever going to make real NFL money, but he's made a boatload, you know, already in his NFL career. And maybe he would say, I had the chance to, you know, win a couple playoff games in New York. I don't know, build my personal brand, whatever, in a big market as opposed to, I don't know, one of the smallest markets in the sport. That is the third path that maybe you try to consider. But anyway, so that's how it all breaks down.
He has made $195 million in his career, which is nuts. I don't think he's ever
made kids to throw. Teach your kids to throw football.
Yeah, teach your kids to throw football and stop playing wide receiver. Although I guess now he's play receiver. Last two things here. One, thoughts on what actually happens on Sunday. And then two, I'll ask you one or two other questions around the AFC East.
I think the biggest thing that people aren't talking enough about is the Chiefs defense is legit. Like very, very legit. And they're also the youngest defense in the NFL. I think Trent McDuffie is like quietly becoming a top 10 corner in the league. Maybe not there yet, but what I love about him is just his versatility. You can play him in the slot if you want to match him up against some teams that love to put their best receiver in the slot. Like against the CeeDee Lamb, I think he'd play 50 snaps in the slot. And then, you know, against somebody else, he would kick out wide. So, but then their front as well. George Karlaftis is starting to look like a former first-round pick. Obviously, we know Chris Jones is Chris Jones. And then, you know, great linebacker. They have four good linebackers. You know, the secondary is talented. Legarius Sneed is a good slot corner. The safeties are good players. And Justin Reed, you know, Brian Cook's coming along. They're their former second-round pick. So everyone's talking about their offense, which, of course, I understand. But that defense is, like, for real. So, yeah, I mean, look, I watched the Bears-Chiefs game. It was legitimately my Fox local broadcast changed to a different game at halftime. And Kurt Menefee was like, we're going to put on a more competitive football game. And Taylor Swift's in the building and they're doing that. So it probably took a lot for them to go that route. But I'll be honest, I'm very rosy on the pod. I think this one's going to be pretty ugly if I'm being frank.
Yeah. It's hard not to feel that way. I'm not sure how I'm going to lean yet. I think it's either going to be similar to a Dallas game or it's going to be a game where you're like, how is this 20-17 with 4 minutes left? And like, wow, the Jets defense is balling. Similar to the Buffalo game, we're like, oh, wow, they have a shot here. Like, go make a play. And, you know, maybe you steal one. The Jets always steal one or two games a year that you're like, what? And then there's one or two that they lose that you're like, there's no way they just lost this game. We saw it last year. They beat Buffalo when no one expected to. And then they went to New England and laid an absolute egg. Or New England or Minnesota, I can't remember last year after the Mike White stuff became a disaster after he got hurt, obviously. Dolphins, Bills Sunday, and then Niners, Cowboys next week. Those the two best games of the year already. Like, I feel like they might be the two best games of the year. I know we're going to get Dallas, Philly twice. Those kind of feel like the two best games of the year, no?
I agree. I mean, this Buffalo-Miami game is going to be awesome. I know Miami goes to Philly in like week seven too, so that one's going to be a lot of fun, but yeah, I mean, I just don't see – look, the defenses are talented for both of these teams, but I don't really see how the defenses keep up here. I mean, the Bills secondary to me is a problem. Like, their safeties are ancient. Jordan Poyer has looked really bad. Micah Hyde is, I think, probably not even playing at this point. So, and then Tre'Davious White, love the guy, always have, but that ACL injury, I think, changed who he is as a player. So I don't see how they keep up speed-wise with Miami. And then on the flip side, I like Miami, but Jalen Phillips, not 100%. You know, a couple other issues there. Obviously, I mean, Eli Apple, you can just, it's Stephon Diggs. If he gets a matchup with Eli Apple, I would just throw without even looking if I'm Josh Allen. So yeah, I think points. I think it's going to be a super exciting game. The total is like 53.5. I think it's still going to go over that number. That'll be a fun one to watch for sure.
Yeah. And then lastly, how excited are you getting about Caleb Williams? Are you like, are you in yet? Are you like not allowing yourself to get too excited? Like, where are you at with the sweepstakes?
Oh, I'm all the way in. I will say this. The Chiefs game was not Justin Fields' fault. I watched the film and now we look, ignore my opinion. We've now seen like seven different former quarterbacks like Kyle Sloter, Kurt Warner, JT O'Sullivan, obviously. Like, he was not the problem in that game. He actually threw an absolute pearl to DJ Moore. He dropped it, and I think that was – they were going to lose regardless. But to me, that was kind of the flipping switch of this game's going to get out of hand in a hurry once he dropped that ball. So, but all that said, yeah, I'm all the way in. I watch – Caleb Williams, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy tape every single morning on Sunday mornings before the games kick off. I've been doing that since week two. Yes. And look, here's the thing with Fields. Even if he does figure it out somewhere, it's probably not going to be in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I was not a big Fields person coming out. I think C.J. Stroud's hopefully changing the narrative. You know, with Ohio State quarterbacks, he's looked awesome. Turbo Jared Goff. I know people for some reason thought that was an insult. It's not. Look at Jared Goff's numbers. That's a Pro Bowl level quarterback. The Texans need that if they want to D'Amico Ryans to kind of work there. But again, you know, I just Fields doesn't see that. Him and Zach Wilson have a lot of the same issues. Fields is obviously in a way better, you know, runner, but it's a lot of the same issues. If they don't see the field well, like they can't pull the trigger. When they do pull the trigger, it feels like they make the wrong decision. So appreciate everybody for listening. Again, two episodes out today. Make sure you guys are plugged into those. Enjoy the game Sunday. I'll be there, so I don't have to listen to the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift nonstop jammed into my brain, you know, camera shots every 2 seconds. I don't want to get canceled by the Swifties, but good for them. I want to watch football and enjoy football on Sunday. So appreciate everybody for listening. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll have one more set on Friday. Take care and talk to you guys soon.